Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible, I tell you, is hell down here in Benton Harbor. You would not believe this. We had another noose found in the back of a black man's home. Yet and still, we're going to track this noose down. But I'm happy today. I'm happy to be on the air, and I'm happy to tell the people all about the city of Benton Harbor, also the hostile takeover of our city. We need the help of the people. We need the people to take a stand, because if it happens in the city of Benton Harbor, it can happen in your hometown. So we're looking forward to people coming. We're talking about our August the 10th mass demonstration here in the city of Benton Harbor. We want people to come from all over the country, and we want you to bring your golf club, because we want every single person to bring a golf club. We want to show them that we're not afraid of them, and we will not be intimidated by them. It's the rich versus the poor. It's a class war, and it's all about them and their mind. So let's show them what we can do and how we handle things. I tell you, this has been a tremendous week. The state of Michigan have called a town hall meeting in the city of Benton Harbor. It's going to be May 20th, 2010, Thursday evening at 6 p.m. at Benton Harbor High School. It says, Mr. Harris, the emergency financial manager for the city of Benton Harbor, will hold a town hall meeting to discuss his finances and his plans to improve the financial performance and operation of the city of Benton Harbor. He said, this public meeting is open to all residents and stockholders of the city of Benton Harbor. What he's doing right now, he's looking for a job. He's trying to figure out a way how he can stay here and sell off the land in the city of Benton Harbor. But I tell you this, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure they know that we're here. I tell you, I never seen a city actually take it over like the city of Benton Harbor. The Governor Jennifer Granholm and her gang, her troopers, and create all kind of mess. But I'm happy today. I'm happy today. I think I have one of our co-hosts, Ralph Portland. Is that you, Ralph?
That's me. I'm listening and waiting to get rolling.
Yes, absolutely. But let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard of a city that has been taken over by the governor, and she sends one of her cronies down there, and the residents of Benton Harbor have to pay his salary? I never heard of that. Maybe you can point me in the right direction, Ralph.
Yes, well, what's happening throughout the country is that they are privatizing the cities. The assets that were public assets are being sold off to private institutions. And let me give you an example. One of the most outrageous examples is in California, where Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House's husband, is very much involved in one of these corporations that is on the receiving end, able to buy community public properties at a song and a dance, which they will turn into great profits. Now, the smoke here is they're doing it to help the city of San Francisco and the state, because they are strapped.
Hey, Ralph, that's what? The same message they send in here.
Precisely. This is the big lie. They're going to help you, and when they help you, they're stealing from you under the guise of helping you. So it's not just Benton Harbor. This is the program of the day, and I want to remind people again, without beating a dead horse, so to speak, This is the Democratic Party program that's doing this. This is in lockstep with privatization of the schools, which they do under the guise of helping you. But what they're doing is putting money in their pockets. And I must digress for a moment to say, how is this public education charter school thing possible? How were they able to sell this to people? It's based on the failure of the public schools. And what is the reason why the public schools failed? The reason why everything goes wrong in America, racism. One of the best public school systems in the country was New York City, when the public schools were white, and it had nothing to do with the intellect. It had to do with the very reality that no people that are not respected for their humanity, that's us black people, we are disrespected. They do not credit us with having humanity. No people who are disrespected of their humanity, children, our intellect will be respected. So if you're black, brown, or yellow, you know, the teachers walked in, hey, your kids can't learn. As a matter of fact, in New York City, they said automatically, listen, it takes those Latinos or black folks 6 years or 7 years to learn whatever, 7 and 8 years to learn what everybody else learns in six. This was the thinking. So this is the problem. Racism is the problem. They use it. The public schools went down. Now they're privatizing. The people have built up. We've had 80 years of affirmative white action, starting with the Roosevelt years when they had the WPA works, and we a lot of detail about that we will not discuss. But people built assets. The public domain was built during these years. Unions, racist
Ralph,
as they are.
Ralph, let me ask you this question. Why do you think the public school system have went down, it right now is at an all-time low?
Let me tell you, the same reason in Benton Harbor, inner city, I call it. And I just say one inner city, it's the same as all the others. Pittsburgh, New York, Detroit, Chicago, the inner city systems, as they became changed from white to non-white, then the system went down.
Is that because of the lack of money, or is that
was a part of it? But remember this: there was no money in those southern schools, in those southern separate but unequal schools. There was no money, but there was learning because there were black teachers there working so hard to educate their students, walking down dirt roads, many times no running water, but they learned. And let us not forget the great Cuba. They didn't have all of they don't have any money. One of the most educated nations in the world, the first nation to export education. It is not about money. What it is about respect of the intelligence of the child they are teaching. In a racist society, that does not exist. There is no respect for the intelligence of the children they're teaching. And remember this, in all of these inner cities, it was difficult for a black teacher to get a job teaching black children. Now, people say, oh, Ralph, you're talking racism. No, I'm not. I'm talking reality. It was unthinkable that a black teacher could teach in a white school, but yet it was thinkable, doable, and done with white people teaching black children in black schools. Now, I'm not going to fall for that nonsense of saying if your black is beautiful, black can be beautiful. And I'm not going to fall for the nonsense that white is right. There are good teachers and there are bad teachers. And if you do not control your schools, you have no control. You have no say over who's in front of your child. And you cannot, we would separate the good from the bad, not based on color, but based on success. But those of us who said we would do that were taken apart by the press. They're racist, and with no proof, but we were labeled. And just as the media is able to label everything, because we have become I don't know, a nation more interested in Tiger Woods' girlfriends than the Gulf oil spilling. Who the most popular is it? Jerry Springer. And although I will say to you, Reverend Pinckney, you have built an audience of people whose brain levels whose brains are active on more real and more relevant issues. But this is the nation we're in.
Oh, absolutely. Ralph, let me ask you this. We're here in the city of Benton Harbor. Our school district is $11 million in the red. And we're not a large school district. And they consider it a lot of money. They figure it's that within the next year that the state will come in and take over the school system also. Now, if we're $11 million in the red, they believe that closing schools and putting more students in the classroom will help close that deficit or wipe out that deficit. Now, give me some feedback on that if you can.
Yes, it may wipe out the deficit, but it'll also wipe out what little education that's going on. There becomes a point of diminishing returns. Do you want to have an education system? An education system costs money. And do you want to have an education system? An education system must be rid of racism or projections of failure. But understand, every education system in the country is in the red. The American economy is in the red. The world economy is in the red. So that's hardly an issue to say, oh, we have to come to Benton Harbor and take over their school system because they're in the red. Then take over the world school systems. They're all in the red.
That's just like the city itself. The government wants to come in here and take over everything.
That leads, you know where that leads me. Be careful, Reverend, because what I'm saying is we must take over the government because they're in the red. They have run an economy in the ground. Money, as you said, money for the wealthy. Class war, as you said. This is what we're involved in. So we must take the other side and say, wait a minute, let's analyze what this is you're saying. And you have analyzed it perfectly. They're taking the money for the rich. And I have been in Benton Harbor only once. And I will not tell you that I did a tour of the city. But I was there long enough to see that's a beautiful city. And every time I hear you mention the high school and the golf course and the lake, I wish I had been there and to see what these wealthy people are salivating over, you know, taking all of this wonderful property. And I see your understanding of the need to fight them because they will take everything. And one of the things that has happened is I always say, you see, we, and I'm black, as you know, my folks go back to the 1850s, early 1800s in Delaware. We were slaves. And one of the things that I say, we are 40 years behind time in our thinking. And back in the 60s, when people were talking about going places, five states in the South for black people, et cetera, I would always say, don't you understand? You don't need to go to the suburbs because we are in, we live on the finest property in the country, the most valuable property in the country, the inner cities. And now the time is caught up with us. They're putting us out of the inner city. You don't have to run from the inner city. If you're still here, they're throwing you out and gentrifying it. And if we had the sense to stay there, live there, and control that, it would be a different world today. A totally different world.
Absolutely. Here's the thing, too, Ralph. How do we allow them? Now, what you just explained was so tremendous, and I hope our listeners could understand that. How do we sit here and explain and allow a government to come into our city and take over our city? And here's the deal. She's $1.8 billion in the red, and Benton Harbor was just a mangy. less than $4 million in the red, and she want to come in here and take over this city and give this city to the corporations. That's what she's doing right now.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head. They'll use any excuse to give the city to the corporations. And if they can get some traction on saying, oh, the city owes money, it's trinkets and beads compared to what we owe. People are not thinking about, you know, you don't want to have a failure come in and teach you how to succeed. You want to have somebody who's successful to teach the failures how to succeed.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Comparatively, the city of Benton Harbor should take over the state because they're less in debt than the state is. But you see, it's all a ruse, a game. What did Henry Highland Garnett say? Not until the eyes of their mind have been clouded, not until their disinformation perpetuates, is self-perpetuating, has the work of slavery been done. And they've just about come there. You see, whatever story they tell us, we automatically accept it. Oh, we're in debt. Well,
and that's because of, and remember this, that's where the media comes in and plays a part.
That's where the media comes in. And, you know, and see, everything is tied in if you have understanding. And let us go back to Booker T. Washington. He said some good things. Booker T. said that we should not, we should not aspire to the intellectual world. Well, that was wrong. We should aspire to the intellectual world, but that we should not forget the trades. You have to learn how to do masonry. You have to learn how to build a house. You have to learn how to repair a car. You have to learn all of the basic things of life, but then that should not preclude you from going on to the theoretical, to the so-called higher intellectual aspirations. But, and as I remind people, I'm not mad at Booker T. for saying those things. But what I'm angry about Booker T. is that he was an agent for the federal government to buy out black media. People are not aware of that. What he would do is buy black media at an inflated price because the person who had, say, a local newspaper that was worth, I'll make up a number, $10,000 in those days, he would buy it for $50,000. Well, the person who owned it would be very happy, but they wiped out black media.
And the black media, they probably didn't quite understand how powerful they was.
I'm sure they did not. And as we remember, I think it was the Cleveland Plain Dealer, how powerful that was during the 30s. And one of the histories, you know, like my hair is beginning to tingle on my arms when I think of the black Pullman porters. These guys working at the lowest level of servants, understood the importance of taking that paper. And there was no station manager. They, as individuals and as an organization, distributed that paper throughout the South when no black media could get distribution. And they handed it off to people waiting in railroad stations. And what a marvelous thing. And whenever people start talking down, when I feel bad about, you know, some of the we've done, I think of those moments in history where groups, organizations, this important organization, these guys working on the lowest level of pay, understood and took it on not for a salary, that somebody would hand them the stack of papers, drop this off in Mobile, you know, drop, and then somebody would be in Mobile to get it. And it was not against the law per se, but it was against practices, and that the local sheriff would catch you, it was worse than having a gun. And so I'm saying, people did these things to keep the media going, And then we lost it. This is how we are where we are today. There is no media. And the interesting thing is there was a young man in our organization, and he used to say, you know, his name was Harvey Shapiro, and he would say, if they're able to get away with doing that to black people and black children, they will soon be doing it to white children.
Oh, absolutely.
At Adam and Tyler, sit down. That ain't going to happen.
Rav, you hit it right on the head. Because now, this is what they're doing to white children.
This is what they're doing. Right.
See, they done won the war with black children already.
Right.
You see, it's not a war that we can't come back and win ourselves, but they have won the war. See, this is what I tell everybody. Every single day when I wake up in the morning, I'm going out. When I walk outside my door, I'm going on the battlefield. This is a war. This is no conflict. This is the real deal. And the black people, we don't see it. We don't see that we're fighting a war. They got us so brainwashed that what they're doing is the right thing, and now it's the hostile takeover of everything.
You got it.
And we allowed it, Ralph.
Right. Because we do not see. They have blinded the eyes of our mind, and this becomes self-perpetuating. You know, I always say when remember that program, Get Smart, Maxwell Smart?
Right, Maxwell Smart, right.
When he say, I ask you not to tell me, it was funny, and we all laughed.
Right.
They're still saying, I ask you not to tell me, but it ain't funny.
No, it's not funny no more.
This is, and you try to raise an issue with people about this. Imagine somebody telling you that you started the class war. And I'm saying, wait. The class war has been waging long before you or I were born.
Absolutely.
Long before this nation was born.
Mm.
Back when there were kings and queens and serfs. And everybody served the king and queen. My friend, that was the class war. And in the European tradition that we have studied, because, you know, like African studies is new, we don't know much about what happened, and it's not taught about what happened in Africa, but the Magna Carta was when a beginning of the fight back. But that had nothing to do with poor people. That had to do with counts and dukes and the minor kings and queens of the time that said, hey, wait, we have to have a little say. You cannot arrest somebody and put them in jail and then not accuse them or not give them a chance to defend themselves, but that was for the noblemen. But you see, it started with the noblemen, and we worked it down, and we worked it down to white, and we even almost, and I'm going to say almost got it down to poor whites. We were not considered women and black. No, we never got there. Never happened. But we were working towards those ends. It almost got down to poor whites. And I think, you know, if I were to sit and teach a class on history, I would say that history reversed itself, the push of history reversed itself in the Civil War. Now listen close. And in the Civil War, the precursor to the Civil War was so-called the question of slavery, industrial America as opposed to agrarian America. When in one of the lines in the Lillian Hellman's play, The Other Side of the Mountain, it was
right.
Never so many people fought to defend a system that they had nothing to do with it. That was the Southern white Confederate soldier. They fought to maintain slavery, to maintain a way of life that they had nothing to do with it. So I say, instead of beginning the push the other way to include blacks, rather than see blacks get in on the poverty that they had, and make no mistake about it, they were not the land owners there. They were just the poor whites, and many of them are in the same boat they are today that they were in the 1800s. But rather than have blacks involved on that same level as they were, they fought to support the wealthy. And
absolutely.
From that,
and you know, that's pretty much what going on today. What the upper class want? They want the poor whites to fight against the blacks.
Exactly.
That's basically what it, see, if they can get the poor whites to fight against the blacks, that simply means that they don't have to do any fighting. They can sit back and accumulate this tremendous wealth and keep everybody fighting with each other while they sit in their big homes, their mansions, and smoke their long cigars and do whatever they want, fly all over the country, while we're down here fighting each other. Now, here's the thing, like I was saying earlier. There was a noose found last week here in Benton Harbor behind this guy, right where the Dawson factory is located, where they fired 8 blacks and they hung that black noose. Now, this guy that owned Dawson is a very, very wealthy man. When I say wealthy, he's up there financially with the Uptons and everybody else. So why would he tolerate a noose hanging in his factory? And then one found behind this man's house who lived right down the street from his factory. Why would he tolerate that? Because he want to keep everybody fighting. He don't care who wins.
Yeah, you got that right there. You've analyzed it perfectly. And if you can communicate that, who said that? Emerson, the truth cannot be told so as to be understood and not be believed. I believe it was Emerson who said that. And mm-hmm. and I keep thinking about that. The truth cannot be told so as to be understood and not be believed. I guess the problem is making people understand it. Just that statement you made. Why would he tolerate this thing happening? Well, you could communicate that truth to people, why he would tolerate that, maybe they will understand it and do something. All we can do is try. You're telling the truth every day. Your actions are every day. And I'm interested in this August, you know, like a club carrying thing. You
right.
know, like golf club.
That,
maybe
that,
we can...
that, look, Ralph, I'm going to need you and Larry. I'm going to need y'all here to help lead that. Because we're going to march straight across the golf course, because the beach is directly across the golf course, where we can go to Gene Clark Park and have a big rally. While they're playing golf, they'll be looking at us, and they will be intimidated, because they're intimidated if it's 5 or 6 people. But I'm expecting a lot of people to show up. I'm expecting people to do things, and the thing is, bring a golf club. Everybody.
As soon as I heard your announcement, I started thinking, now where can I get a golf club? Now, you know, I'm 76. And
yes.
Back in the day when there were golf clubs, I come from near the little town Oakland, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh, where the great golfer, I'm trying to remember his name, Arnie somebody, you know, like where his father had the golf course. Arnie Palmer.
Not Arnie Palmer, is it?
Palmer. And what we did as kids is we would go to the local golf courses into the lakes, etc., and find golf balls, you know, and then we'd get a half a penny or a penny apiece for them. But in those days, I'm talking about the 40s, you couldn't go find a golf. You know, man, if you were black and got on a golf course, you know, I guess that would be tantamount to rape or something.
Right.
So I remember at nighttime sneaking on the golf course and going through the ponds and the traps and looking in the woods with a flashlight to find golf balls. And now we supposedly have progressed to where the greatest golfer of all is, you know, I don't want to say, you know, like he said, he wasn't black, so I guess he isn't. And Obama has proven he's not black. So
right.
I guess there is some progression here.
Well,
I don't know. But
I tell you one thing. Tiger Woods found out the hard way that he was black, that he had some black blood in him. they tortured him. I mean, he had to resign. He had to drop his golf club right on the golf course and leave because he was so embarrassed. He been doing golf. He found out the hard way that he was a black man playing golf. You see, and how do you say, he's the best golfer that ever lived. Oh, now they don't even consider it. They just say it's just Tiger Woods now.
Yeah.
See,
well, I'm going to enjoy. I say this to you. I'm going to enjoy walking across the golf course in the daytime.
Yes.
With the golf club. And I'll be thinking of the whole history of how I went from sneaking on the golf courses at night and in the ponds and in the woods to find these golf balls for half a penny or penny a piece. Walking across.
Yeah, I bet you thought you was rich.
Okay.
I know that's right. But look, you're going to get a chance to meet Jack Nicklaus. He's going to be here on August the 10th. and he's bringing all his buddies. So we're going to have us a golfing tan.
I don't think he'll be talking to me or us.
Look, I'm hoping that he'll rent me a golf car so I won't have to walk.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it is interesting. You know, it can be funny, but it's not. It hurts, and that brings me to the question of, you know, like each week we beat up on Obama. But
mm-hmm.
It becomes clear and clear to me that it is not Obama. And as you said, the class war. We in the black community have too long avoided that issue. And, you know, there is a class war. And I was I came from a black family that we never discussed the class war so as to speak. It was those black people who didn't want to confront, as opposed to those black people who did want to confront. And this is... you know, this is the interesting thing. But that was the class war. Those of us, and my father was one of the people who joined the CIA as an organizer, and then when the AFL allowed black people, he became an organizer with the union organizer with the AFL. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I've been reminded it was the CIO. Yes, the CIO first.
Mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm.
After the CIO became the AF, we were allowed to join the AFL. Just like the Lawyers Guild became an organization that allowed black lawyers to join because the regular lawyers association did not allow black members. But anyway, this was the class war. But we didn't use those terms. Class war, and as Malcolm came talking about the house nigger and the field, this was the class war, but we never defined it. So what happened was we never made the distinction, although Paul Robeson did great work, and they attacked him, and they attacked Lena Horne for having to do anything to do with Paul Robeson or W.E.B. Du Bois, who talked about the class war, but Du Bois is like a kind of a mixed bag. He talked about the class war, but he was conflicted as
mm-hmm.
to, you know, when he talked to the talented tent, what that meant, and his arguments with Booker T. Washington. It's something that has to be explored, but what I'm trying to say here is we never defined ourselves per se as different. I think the 60s, those of us who fought for black history were opposed by black people who said it was too vicious to teach our children what was happening in America in terms of slavery and lynching and after slavery, because it would taint them for a lifetime. I says, no, the truth is never any truth that cannot be told so as to be understood, not be believed, and learned from. And so we've always had this class war, and if you remember the 60s, the struggles of the 60s, what happened was the upper class, the educated, the so-called educated, the trained
mm-hmm.
black person, benefited from
yeah.
the civil unrest.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say mildly, civil unrest that took place. So the changes benefited the I don't even want to say upper class, a certain class of people who had accommodated the white structure got
jobs. In other words, what you're saying that they could be bought and sold.
They were bought and sold, you know.
Right.
And
so that's what you're saying. You're being nice about it, but the truth is that they could be bought and sold, and that's what messed up this. That's why we're messed up today, because of them individuals, them educated people who thought they was educated, went out of their way to please the master rather than please their own race.
So, as you put it right, sold us out. They took jobs and never looked back to say, why do I have this job? It wasn't because I'm a nice person or the man likes me or I speak the language in a certain way. No, it was to keep the rest of us quiet, and they never reached back. And this is one of my arguments of the struggle we had in the 60s. To get black teachers and black principals and black supervisors. And when we got it, the black people acted worse than the white people.
Oh, absolutely.
A up call with Obama. When we got it, the black president operates worse than the white president. You know, like I always said, hey, we may be looking back for the good old days when Bush was in charge. This guy has gone off the charts, but it is our own dream. As every con man will say to you, well, you want to con somebody, sell them their own dream.
Yeah.
And because Obama was our dream, they sold him to us.
And
now
you know
we
what?
Have a nightmare.
Ralph, if you sit back and listen to people talk about we got us a black president, and if you listen to it and listen to the people who's saying this, then you will understand why we're in such a compromising position today. This is the way we think. When you go to a job, you have a black supervisor there. What he do? He pops the whip. He makes sure that you're intimidated, harassed, and whatever else is necessary for him and for that white master to get that job done. He does that. Every black supervisor I have ever known went out of his way to intimidate you and let you know that he was the top man or the top Negro in charge.
He wanted to identify.
That's right.
And this whole thing, you know, like one of the things that you are a rare breed indeed. You are a minister, a man of God, teaching the truth about what this world is about, teaching the truth about resisting, teaching the truth about understanding, and then look around you. How many other reverends are out there? You can name them on your left hand and have a few fingers left over.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you and then you be struggling to name them.
That's right.
Yeah. You said maybe him. Oh, no, not him. Maybe this one. No, not that one. Is there one? If there's one, we'll save the whole city.
Yeah, so here we are. You know, never mind the city, in the whole country. Is you and Jeremiah right? You say, well, they're not many. One of the wonderful things, you know, about keeping your mind open, I'm as you can tell, I'm a leftist. I believe in the righteous union movement, not these corporate things that they call unions nowadays. I'm talking about the righteous union movements that were support of the community they came from, that supported people, were talked about public education out of the Reconstruction period, that type of union, that type of unionism. When I think of this, I think of the, and let me not waste time in trying to get the exact words, this that does not exist today, this feeling of us rather than me that does not exist today. And I get all tied up and angry when I think of the civil rights movement and the minister's inability to rally people to fight the Klan and the blowing up of churches. You know, when do you get angry? And then I heard the other day that just before the march on, I want to get it correct. It was Mississippi or Alabama, one of the famous marches where the students, where they were going to march and where they were going to sit in, where they were the bus, you remember, all of us are of a certain age, remember the restaurant sit-ins and the,
right, the freedom
sit-in, the bus rides into the South. They were riding, and I don't want to say it because I may get the city wrong, Bull Connor, and
yeah.
they were riding the bus in the front seat, and they were taken off the bus, and they were beaten terribly. And as it turned out, there was Martin Luther King had come to support the bus riders, you know, integrating the bus riders, and the people were getting beaten, pummeled, bloody, thrown around like rag dolls, kicked, and they were organizing people to take the next ride, the next leg of the trip, and a mob of 3,000 white people had gathered around the church. But I just found out recently that the cab drivers, the black cab drivers, had organized themselves, and they were organized to come and deal with the Klan and the people who were beating them. I'm not talking about whisper to convince them anything. As I was, it was with weapons to fight those others with weapons and to guarantee the safety of the people there, the bus riders. And when Martin Luther King heard of it, he felt that he had to do something dramatic. So what he did was he walked out into the crowd of white militants and Klansmen, and he walked through the crowd and turned around and walked back, and he, Martin, was not beaten. And therefore, he felt justified in saying to the cab drivers who had organized themselves as a militant defense group, not to come. But then my question is, what about those other people who were
right?
Those
absolutely
other freedom riders, as they
absolutely
were.
And we got to remember too, he was a big name. He was Martin Luther King. Even in them days, they knew of him.
Exactly.
You see, they
and
knew
he
of
had
him.
Federal protection.
Right, and they knew that if they messed with him, all hell would break loose with the governor.
Exactly.
And the president. Matter of fact, he had it so good.
It was the president and the National Guard that you had to look out for. If you beat King, you arrested King, but you treated him nice.
Yes.
I would say here in the city, you know, we have a gentleman called Al Sharpton. I call him a fraud. And I says, Al Sharpton gets arrested. He doesn't get arrested like the rest of us who are on a demonstration who get arrested. And one of the things I say, in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, when you were arrested, you expected a beating.
That was
part of the arrest. But when Martin Luther King justified telling them not to come because he wasn't harmed, see, I call that he made a mistake. That's false leadership. And this is the point I'm getting to. For most of our leaders are false leaders who do not deal with the real world. And because we have accepted this refusal to deal with the real world, this is why we are where we are today. People think that nonviolent resistance is resistance. Not as Gandhi said, and let me be clear once again what Gandhi said, because there are so many people who quote Gandhi who know nothing about him, never read a book, never will read a book, but they say Gandhi was nonviolent resistance. He was not. What he said was, those of you who are not able to carry a gun, do something in nonviolence. Let's stop buying British materials. Let's stop buying British clothes. Let's stop buying British products. Let's march peacefully. But you guys with the guns, never put them down. And this is Gandhi's philosophy. Never put them down, because if you do, the British will slaughter us all. He understood that.
Oh, absolutely.
Really, he said, don't put them down. Because if you put them down, the British will slaughter us all. And as opposed to Martin Luther King says, put them down. Never pick them up. You see, God.
And another, you know, and don't forget another reason why they was claiming that Martin Luther King preaches nonviolent, because that's along the line, that's when Malcolm came along.
Yes,
you
right.
You see, Malcolm had the, his thing was that if you hit me and you slap me, I'm going to slap you on both sides of your face.
What was it?
So Malcolm.
That was beautiful. Don't do that. And I'm going to quote another leader who's still alive, but in jail today, Lynn Stewart, when questioned about, violence, when they says, you associate with these people who are violent. And her answer was, whatever happened to self-defense and self-determination as a human right? What happened to that? Well, of course, there was no answer.
No, absolutely not.
We just don't.
And in the state of Michigan, there was no self-defense. There's no such thing as self-defense until recently. Now they just recently passed a law saying that that you can stand up for yourself.
Yeah, well, in the history of America, there has been the history that black men do not have the right of self-defense,
mm-hmm.
or non-white women have a right to self-defense. I think it was Inez Garcia out in California who had been raped by three white men. She was Mexican-American, and I think a couple weeks later she recognized one of them, went and got a rifle and killed them.
Mm-hmm.
She was found guilty of murder. And
I remember that case.
Yeah, Susan Jordan, her attorney, took the appeal and won it. That she had a right to self-defense. These guys had raped her and walked.
Mm.
And and Susan Jordan died in a plane crash about a year ago. Sad. But, it's this whole question of self-defense that has been denied us must be reinforced today. And that doesn't mean you're mad at somebody. Self-defense. Defend
Absolutely.
Myself. Mm-hmm. And if you, by whatever, you, and I tell everybody very clear, if I'm having a problem with my neighbor and he gets a gun, I would be foolish not to have one.
Oh,
I have
no question
a problem
about that.
And we do have a problem with an army of occupation. We call it police department. The armies
mm-hmm.
of occupation, don't ever forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have guns, we're foolish.
Oh,
now,
no question.
And I don't want to mess up your program. But
no, you're doing great.
There are legal guns.
Yeah.
There are legal guns. You can buy all of the antique guns. The way they have in the Westerns, you can get those things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
People, here we are in a society with an army of occupation, and we have people running around talking about nonviolent resistance. And I'm saying, well, all right, that if you feel that way, but I don't. I'm not going to bother you, and I'm not going to allow you to bother me.
You sound just like me, Ralph. But at this time, we got Libby on the line. Libby,
oh, I'm sorry.
There?
Sorry,
No, you're good. You did a great job, man. This the show been great. We gave them a little history today. We gave them everything they needed today.
You do
the
your
ratings gonna go through the roof today.
Okay,
Libby, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I have a report that actually came from you to begin with, and the title is Nooses Hanging in Benton Harbor. Workplace racism and sexism out of control in Benton Harbor. And it begins, Dawson Manufacturing in Benton Harbor, Michigan is a workplace steeped in racial abuse. The most recent blatant racial attack was the hanging of a noose in an area of the company where 15 African-American employees could see it. And then in parentheses, a similar incident 2 weeks ago, a man living a half a mile from Dawson Manufacturing found a noose hanging in his backyard. He is not a Dawson employee. End of parentheses. Now, back to Dawson. Black workers are the brunt of racist jokes and sexual attacks on a daily basis. White supervisors constantly touch black female employees inappropriately. Dawson's owner, Mr. Bob Trivid, simply fires female employees who complain. Trivid has fired over 10 employees for reporting racial attacks of various kinds to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the EEOC. For African Americans living in Benton Harbor, life can be very difficult. A culture of fear has been created in the city. It makes it possible and even tolerable for a business such as Dawson to make a noose and hang it in plain sight in 2010.
Wow.
Another Benton Harbor company with serious racist workplace violations is AutoZone. Supervisor Brian Waldschmidt uses the N-word regularly, and his Tennessee home office supervisor, Gary Bailey, protects him from any charges. Waldschmidt told an employee of Indian descent to, quote, start dressing black so people won't think we are racist, end of quote. Whirlpool's racist and sexist workplace behavior is well known. It creates an atmosphere, especially in the majority African-American Benton Harbor, where inhumane treatment is tolerated and even encouraged. Anyone can contact these companies and demand the end of workplace racist and sexist abuse. And many thanks from Reverend Pinckney and the NAACP and Banco if you do take any action. As I said, one is called Dawson Manufacturing. The other is called AutoZone. So Dawson
Manufacturing. Can you give out the telephone number to those places?
Okay. Dawson is DAWSON Manufacturing. AutoZone is one word, just AUTOZONE. And you can Google those, just put Benton Harbor after them, and you can get their address and their phone number. But, okay, I could give Dawson Manufacturing. I'll just say it's at 1042 North Crystal Ave, and that's in Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. And its phone number is 269-925-0100. AutoZone is 1681 Old State Highway 139, again, Benton Harbor, 49022. Again, the area code is 269, and again, the first three numbers are 925, and this is 2288. The last thing is that on August 10th, there will be a mass demonstration held in Benton Harbor. It's going to begin at 11 a.m., so that's Tuesday, August 10th, 11 a.m. It'll begin at the City Hall at 200 East Wall Street, W-A-L-L, East Wall Street. There will be a march to Jean Clark Park to protest Harbor Shores and Whirlpool's hostile takeover of the city. Everybody is invited, and Reverend Pinckney says, bring a golf club.
Beautiful. We're all going to play a little golf on that day. And here's the thing. We have to let Dawson AutoZone is all over the country. That is
right.
One of the biggest operations that is. And we need to let them know we're going to set up what we're going to start doing here in Benton Harbor. I'm going to get some leaflets together. I'm going to get some flyers together and start passing them out about Dawson and AutoZone. Matter of fact, I'm going to be working on that for the next 2 days continuously so they can get a message sent to them that they will never forget that we're not going to tolerate this mess anymore. I mean, how do you sit here and allow somebody to hang a noose in your company and feel good about yourself and decide to fire the people who complain about it?
That's one of the work issues that is forever in Black America. I remember while I was in college working in a restaurant, I was a busboy cleaning, and some of the Black waitresses were being harassed by the son of the owner. He was no kid. He was 45 years old. So I had to take him out back personally and tell him what I would do to him the next time he brought one of the young waitresses to tears. And it was always that veiled threat of being fired. And a couple days later, the owner came to me and said, I heard what you did. And I says, I meant every word of it. And he says, I just came to tell you that I do not hold it against you or the young lady. I wish I had heard of it sooner. And,
well, I was wondering if Reverend Pinckney knows, or anybody knows, how can we find out if the EEOC is doing anything about this?
Right.
I've been on top of them. I'm the one who forced them to fill out the forms. Dawson and AutoZone. Matter of fact, I took them to our library, sat down with them, and made sure everybody filled it out. And also, matter of fact, it took up most of my time. See, my time is usually planned out every single day. But when you're dealing with 8-9 people, and when you're dealing with them, you almost have to have a dictionary to help them. But the thing is, we have to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do.
Right.
See, if we're doing what we're supposed to do, we don't have to worry about stuff like that. I made sure that everybody filled out that EEOC form, everybody, and mailed it back. We faxed it back to people. I've been really on top of this and
How are you able to contact the people, the employees, to get them to fill those out? Did you walk right into the workplace?
Then you send them out to get them. That's how I work. If I did it myself, it would be too much work for me. So once a person come in and make a complaint with me, talk to me about it, I make him work. Because if you do all the work yourself, then they don't want to do nothing. So what I do, I used to do all the work. Now what I do is that if you do not go out and do your job or do what you're supposed to do, I'm not going to help you and waste my time. Because most
Freedom
black folks,
you got it right.
Yeah, they will quit on you in a minute. You see, if it get kind of heated, they will start. They will drop off like flies. So what you have to do, you have to make them work.
So if somebody comes to you for help or with a complaint, then you involve them.
Oh, absolutely. I make them fill out the complaint. That's what I do. I make them write down everything that happened. And when you write down everything that happened, then you bring it to me and let's review it and let's go over it. I make them meet me at the library. That's what I make them do.
That's really great.
Wonderful. That takes energy. It's our famous Queen Mother Morse, freedom, you start off with a group of people, and as they drop off, you get another group. And so it's always a changing group. But as long as the struggle is going, we're ahead of it. So I'm never discouraged by people who start off and when it gets a little hot, they drop off. That's to be expected. There will be more join this struggle.
Here's why I do that, too. We see with Atlanta Automotive here, they fired 140 black people. And I told them that they was going to win this case if they stuck together.
Mm-hmm.
I took all my time. I used to spend so much time with these folks.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to do nothing but show up with their complaint.
Right.
By the time we won the case, we had only 10 people left out of 140. And I was angry. I was very upset. Because you have to do what you need to do. But listen, we only got 1 minute left. And I tell you, this has been a really tremendous show. I didn't get Valerie on, and I do apologize to you, Valerie, but if you got something to say, you can take the last few minutes and say whatever you want.
Right on.
That's okay, Reverend Pinckney. I just wanted to let you know I enjoy the conversation, and I'm with you all. I'm here to support you all.
I appreciate that. That's beautiful. But we needed much support, and I want you to make everybody to start making plans to be here August the 10th. And whatever you do, bring a golf club, whatever you do. Even if you have to go to one of these hunk shops and get you just one golf club, about $5, just bring it. It don't have to be a good one, because if you don't have one, I'll give you one of mine.
All right. I would definitely be there with my golf club.
Hey, so that's good. How about, Libby, how about you? You getting a set of golf clubs, or you going to bring your golf club?
I absolutely am. I'll be there.
All right. And I know Lynn Meadows and the rest of the gang from up there are going to be there. And Ralph, you need to start making plans to come.
I'm going to be there, and I'm figuring out how can I send my driver,
yes.
Like my golf club. You know, yes. Send out the mail to what address can I send that so it'll be there when I get there?
Well, let's send it to Whirlpool. let's send it to Whirlpool and tell them to store it for you until we get here.
That's an idea.
Yeah, so that's an idea. But look, but on a serious note, we have to do something about AutoZone and Dawson.
We have to stay on top of that. And
Ralph, spread the word for me if you will.
I certainly will.
You got a good email list, so let people know about AutoZone.
Yes, file a letter.
And also Dawson. And Valerie, I want you to do the same thing. Libby, I know you will.
Yes, I sure will.
All right, we got about 10 seconds.
Okay.
Listen, I'm going to have to say goodnight to everybody, and I'll see you all next week.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.
God bless you.